Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Thanks for listening to the Primetime with Isaac and Souk. I'm Souk, by the way, podcast brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center, doing the right thing since 1952.
Cute.
If you can find the time to explore the mind of a stripper,
then you can find the time to spend with your actual family.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Damn! What they on? All steroids and no carbs? Them some thick-ass kids.
This is Primetime.
We're not like you. We're grown-ups.
Your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Oh, my goodness.
Here are Isaac Ropp and Jason Sakanik with Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
Yeah, bros. Hour two. Sup. Oh, wow. Our cycles are synced.
In stereo, we're available.
Sada.
So, talking about this MLB to Portland thing and, you know, how the Blazers maybe fit into that.
Because, you know, the Blazers don't want it. The Blazers didn't want the Timbers.
Hell no, man.
Paul Allen is very protective of Portland, the Blazers brand, and not wanting competition. Because, let's be honest, there's not a ton of advertising or Fortune 500 dollar, you know, companies to spread that money around.
I don't know how much this matters, but it needs to be mentioned with the MLB to Portland thing. The Blazers are an obstacle. How much of one? Again, I don't know. But the Blazers are definitely going to fight that. And So are the Timbers. You know, Merritt Paulson's a heavy hitter. He doesn't want that.
No one wants that.
So look, that's something that not enough people are talking about. But to me, it goes hand in hand with the theory that you know, Paul Allen may be fed up with the new collective bargaining agreement, and he can't keep up in this new super team environment, and he's not as aggressive as he was.
Well, it's interesting that you asked how he's viewed up at Seattle, and he's
a hero.
And he's a hero, and down here,
he's not.
He should be a hero, because I believe that without Paul Allen, the Portland Trailblazers are no longer in Portland. I think they're gone, because we would not have built a building for them, and they would have gone somewhere else. But he is not viewed that way to your point, the underappreciation thing.
I feel like he feels that, and he does not have a love affair with the city. You remember the whole thing about bankruptcy in the arena, and mm-hmm.
he let it go into that.
So would he, if the rumors that I hear are true and Paul Allen sells the Blazers, I think the first thing that needs to be said is hopefully somebody would come in and keep them here.
Yeah.
And I think the NBA would want that.
Well, and I think that's, to me, that's moving the Blazers is a non-starter. I just don't think with
I'm not saying he would, no. No. That's not.
No. I'm saying
Paul Allen would not move the Blazers.
No, I'm saying the NBA in general.
I think after
what happened in Seattle, I do not think the NBA will allow someone to come in, buy the Blazers, and move them out of Portland. I don't buy it.
But I do think Paul Allen could wipe his hands of Portland and the team and get involved in bringing the Sonics back. Because remember, he doesn't have to build an arena now up there.
It's there.
It's there.
And it could be, as you said, and then Ian kind of backed you up, a final kind of legacy move. You save the Seahawks, you're already a conquering hero, and now you bring back the Sonics. And as you've mentioned many a times from you reading his book, that is the team that made him fall in love with sports and basketball in general.
So that's the story I want to tell you is, and it pertains to Paul Allen and his legacy play, but also the mayor here, because, you know, Vera Katz just died fairly recently. And you know what's interesting is somebody said to me that, you know, her funeral, of course, Vera Katz, for those who don't know, she was the mayor here back when they were trying to get MLB to Portland the first time. That was trying to get the Expos. They ended up being the Nationals. But Vera Katz was very much a cheerleader for MLB to Portland. Mm-hmm. Her funeral, it's not about, you know, when they sit up there and talk about her legacy, it's not about her budget cuts or the crime rates or the homeless count. It was about what she built. It was about what came under her watch, right? And as it pertains to Paul Allen, you know, that's a big deal. The Sonics could be coming back. There's an arena now. I have an opportunity. I'm fed up in Portland. I'm fed up with the damn CBA. This is my city. They don't care about me down there. F it. I want to be involved in that because, you know, I'm getting older.
Yeah.
I beat cancer twice. So legacy plays are a big deal, and so that goes back to current politicians here. MLB to Portland. Do you want to help? That's a legacy play. Absolutely. You'd be the mayor who helps bring major, basically symbolically through Major League Baseball, make Portland a big time city.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it's coming, whether people want to admit it or not. This city in the next 50, again, look up and down the West Coast, there's not a lot of room for growth. And you're talking major metropolitan areas, except in Portland, and it is going to be huge.
But how do you handle the idea that you could also run the owner of the Blazers out? You don't want to be that guy.
No. It's interesting. There's
because the timing is it sinks.
Yeah, you said 2025, the lease is up?
Yeah, 2025, yeah.
But would it be a big deal if Paul Allen sold it and the team stayed?
I think it is. I think it is a big deal because, as you said, Paul Allen should be a hero down here.
He should be.
He has done more, and I think this is part of maybe his gripe, is he's made the Blazers relevant. Yes. They've been in the playoffs an awful lot, man.
Yeah, they have.
And
what was it, 22 straight years or whatever it was?
Well, it wasn't all him.
No, but I mean, he
built the arena, mm-hmm. and he's just so, I don't know, he's just so aloof. He's kind of hard. He hasn't really connected with the city like he has in Seattle, but.
And I think that's part of it too, is I think the people in Seattle, one, you won a Super Bowl, and that obviously is a big deal, but he saved that. He saved the franchise. And in Portland, I don't think people view it as saving it. And I also think that in Seattle, he's one of their own. And in Portland, you know, we have such a long, weird history with the whole rivalry and, you know, little brother, big brother thing, that I do think that a lot of people in Portland have never felt like Paul Allen has really embraced the city of Portland. I always feel like he's an outsider that visits here.
So if you lose him, you even though the Blazers stay, you run the risk, particularly if MLB comes here, you run the risk of being just a small market team, maybe with an ownership group that doesn't have deep pockets like him,
yeah.
being one of the richest guys in the world. That luxury, you will miss that when it's gone.
Absolutely.
Right? So then you start to be run like, I don't know, give me a small market team that's crappy, that has ownership that can't, you know, that goes on the cheap, and you know the whole routine.
Well, the best example of that right now is not in the NBA. It's in Major League Baseball, and that's the Miami Marlins, right? Supposedly the Marlins came in and they are already in debt, and the Marlins don't have the money to dig their way out of it right now. I mean, that's the easiest one to think about.
Yeah. So
Dodgers a handful of years ago, before they sold it to the current group, who did they have? Was that McCourt?
Yeah, Frank McCourt.
He couldn't pay the payroll.
Yeah, so I don't know, man. It's going to be fascinating to watch this MLB to Portland thing. And then how does that affect the Blazers? What do the Blazers say about that? What do they do behind the scenes to, you know, in that whole thing?
Is it a final straw? If you do get right. Major League Baseball where Paul Allen just finally says, you know what, screw this.
That's right.
Because I'm with you. I think Major League Baseball is coming. I think that behind closed doors, I think they have an agreement with Major League Baseball. Get a ballpark built. You get yourself a team. And whether the city gets on board with it or not, I don't think that's going to stop this group. When we had Barrett on and we asked him, I think they obviously prefer to party with the city because they want it in downtown. But I think this group will find a way to get a stadium done, whether it's here or one of the other locations outside of the city. And boy, it sure sounds like it. At least there seems to be some very strong leanings that Major League Baseball has all but said, you get a ballpark done, you get yourself a team. I think it's coming.
Well, it could be happening with the city. See, I think the city, they're not going to get in the way of this.
They'll get on board.
Yeah, it's just that you can't, I don't know.
Well, but if you're the city and you realize that you can't stop it, it's coming whether you want it or not, why wouldn't you want it then in your city? Why do you want to be the one that pushes this out to Gresham or out to one of the suburbs? So that's the other thing that I think will eventually, the pressure will get to it and they will go along with this and it'll get built in one of the downtown locations.
Well, I view it a little differently. I think that you can't play that card yet. Like if you're Ted Wheeler and you got everybody breathing down your neck about all these issues, you can't just come out and be Vera Katz and rah-rah for Major League Baseball to Portland, because what happens is you only have so much political capital, right? So what happens is you say, oh, okay, this is going to be my thing. It's going to be MLB to Portland. I'm all for this. And then, well, everybody that's battling him on any of the other myriad of issues comes to him and says, oh, okay, I see that you want Major League Baseball. We can help you with that, but we want this. Yes. So I think he's kind of sitting on his hands right now. He's got to play coy with what political capital he does have. But I think ultimately, when push comes to shove, if Barrett's group has their ducks in a row, and Major League Baseball, as we've come to understand, is really behind this.
You think he gets on board?
I just don't think the city gets in the way. I don't. But I just think right now, he can't just come out and be like super cheerleader guy, yeah, right? Because it's just politics.
But when it happens, it's a nice little legacy builder, right?
For sure.
Look at what I did. But then, look at what I helped usher in.
But then does he? Is he the one that, you know, then the Blazers say, well, he's horrible. And here's your legacy. It's crappy because you ran Paul Allen out of, you know.
You can't make everyone happy all the time.
Look, that's true. But that's an interesting dynamic in this whole, in this grand scheme of things. Not a lot of people are talking about how the Blazers and the Timbers feel and how politically charged are they, because they're big players in this market.
They are. They're one of the reasons why we haven't seen any real development down there in the Memorial Coliseum and that being torn down. And we're one of the Blazers, one of the reasons why we didn't have the stadium built down there at the Rose Garden for the minor league team back when Merritt Paulson wanted to do it, that could have been upgraded to a Major League Baseball stadium.
Yeah, how much will they squawk? So anyway, just something to think about. Coming up next, we have the NBA Draft Lottery Primer. It won't take long.
No, but who will be the star? Because every year there's a star.
There'll be a hot chick.
There'll be a hot chick or like a little kid. Someone will steal the show and then like explode on social media.
416 on the Fan.
With Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, let's move on to something more topical to tonight's sporting festivities. We have the Cavs and we have the Celtics. We have that.
Yep. Hopefully we end up getting I'd like to see a split here so we can get a real series.
Wouldn't we all? But we also have the NBA Draft Lottery.
We find out when Boston will be adding another lottery pick to their already ridiculous roster.
Yeah, so a couple things you need to know before we get to in the news. One, the Cavs and the Celtics, I just mentioned them, they're in the Eastern Conference Finals, you know? Mm-hmm. They both have lottery picks. Now, in all likelihood, Boston won't end up with the Lakers pick this year.
Yeah.
But just the idea that the Cavs and the Celtics have a chance at picking in the top five.
I know it's kind of crazy to think about that you're in the Eastern Conference Final, but Boston's been doing this. Boston's been good in every year ends up. Well, Boston was good last year and they ended up with Jason Tatum.
So the Cavs will probably pick in the lower half of the top 10, but still, I mean, that's a big deal for them.
Phoenix, by the way, the team most likely to get the number one overall pick. They've got a 25% chance.
Yeah,
and a 64% chance to be in the top three.
So it's Phoenix 1, the Grizzlies 2 at 20%. The Mavs and the Hawks are each at about 14%. And then the Magic at 9%.
And everyone seems to be fairly certain that the DeAndre Ayton, the center out of Arizona, will go number one. And then it's that other guy, the Luka, is it Doncic? He's a European, and people talk about him like he's the second coming.
There's Marvin Bagley, too.
He's a 6'6 guard. Yeah. Bagley, but it seems to be the kid from Spain and then Ayton. Everyone that I've seen seems to have those guys going one and two.
Well, we talked to Fran Fraschilla about him when he was on when was that?
During the
Hoop
World
Summit?
The Nike World
he
Summit.
He talked about that guy. Where's that kid from? That Doncic?
He's from Slovenia, but he plays for Real Madrid. He's like 17 years old. He's a 6'6 guard.
No, he's 19,
guard.
I thought. I think he's older than that.
I'm looking here.
But he's, I guess they say that kid, nobody's ever done the things that he's done at his age.
Yeah. People are wowed by him.
What were you saying, Mike?
I think I've seen Jaren Jackson Jr. going above Bagley a lot in drafts too.
The Michigan State big,
yeah.
Oh.
You're right. He just turned 19, like a month ago.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, I don't know how good of in other words, like when you compare it to an Odin Durant type draft or the Dwayne Wade draft, you know, and all these great drafts. I don't know. It doesn't seem to me that DeAndre Ayton, boy, he's awful raw. So is Bagley. It's like, you see why they're draft top five guys, but
boy, Ayton looks the part. I mean,
he does.
He looks like an absolute freak.
But I don't know if these guys are like,
it's
slam dunks.
There is a difference, as you said, between being a number one and number two overall pick from year to year. I mean, there is a difference between a guy that comes in and changes the course of a franchise and then a decent player. I mean, look, number one last year was Markelle Fultz. Yep. What the hell did he do? And you know, Tatum is good.
How about Anthony Bennett? Remember that?
Oh yeah.
About
that swing and a miss.
Was that Cleveland?
That was Cleveland. Yeah, Cleveland took him number one overall.
God.
And then they took Wiggins, but then they traded Wiggins for...
How was Anthony Bennett the number one overall pick?
I don't know. I remember that when that happened, everyone was like, oh my God. But Wiggins, you know, Wiggins wasn't, or I guess isn't any sort of franchise player. Far from it.
Yeah, he's good, but...
I mean, he's good, but he's not great. And like Jason Tatum...
Oh, you know who was number two in that draft? I knew there was somebody really good up there. Oladipo.
Oh.
That was the Oladipo draft.
But, you know, Oladipo took a while to really materialize.
I know.
But like you, even guys that are good, I mentioned, right? Tatum, Boston, you know, traded down and ended up with Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum's going to be really good, but is Jason Tatum going to be some sort of, you know, transformative player that just alters the fate? No, he's a solid player, and so no one knows.
Well, I don't know, man. He's awful good. Like, some people think he's, like, he's their best player already. I mean, Jason Tatum is his trajectory. Everybody's talking about Simmons
and rightly so. Donovan Mitchell.
But boy, don't forget about Jason Tatum.
Yeah, but again, is Jason Tatum going to be a very good player, or is Jason Tatum going to be a guy that defines a franchise? Even like Anthony Davis, right? Anthony Davis went number one. Anthony Davis is ridiculous, but he hasn't meant to New Orleans what a once in a generational player means, where you come in and instantly it changes everything.
Yeah, the Anthony Bennett draft was Oladipo 2, Otto Porter 3. Cody Zeller 4 and yeah. Alex Len 5. Well,
that's the only saving grace for Cleveland is that draft sucks.
CJ at 10, but Giannis Antetokounmpo was in there. He was 15.
That's so hard to know.
Yeah.
That's like when Kenyon Martin went number one. And, you know, you look through that draft and you're like, hey, who else? Who else was obvious there? As opposed to some drafts that, you know, you look back on and you're like, yeah, you flat out whiffed on that. See, Greg Oden. Kevin Durant.
So there is a thought that if the Mavericks win the lottery tonight, it was the Ringer that threw this out, that if the Mavericks get it, old Cubes is going to trade it.
Really?
Because the thought is Ayton's good, Bagley's good, this foreign kid, they're all good, but Mavs want to win now, and they want a win now player. So maybe they can trade the number one pick.
Interesting.
You know who the NBA draft.net has the Blazers taking? They're not in the lottery or anything, but I was just checking that today.
I was trying to remember. The last time I saw it was some foreign kid.
Right. Yeah, some foreign guy.
That's all I can go with.
SFG.
They've
taken their share of those.
I remember looking at this. We talked about this like a month ago when I looked this up, and it was some power forward from Bosnia or something.
They have the Blazers at 24 taking DiVincenzo or whatever.
The kid
from Villanova kid.
The Villanova?
The white boy from Nova.
The hero of the NCAA title game.
Was it DiVincenzo? DiVincenzo.
The scrappy gym rat shooter.
Yes.
That's who the Blazers are taking.
Slapping floors.
Who's sneaky athletic.
Sending out racist tweets.
Is that going to get your sports pants tight?
It's better than Grayson Allen, because I've also seen mock drafts where the Blazers have taken Grayson Allen.
Yeah. Yeah, which would you rather have? Probably DiVincenzo.
Yeah, give me the kid that you can't pronounce from Villanova. No one wants Grayson Allen.
Well, the top three spots in the NBA draft lottery will be decided by the old ping pong ball draw, and then four through the rest of the teams in the lottery are ranked by worst record. So remember, they've kind of changed it up here in the last couple years. But the best odds tonight are the Suns at 25%. The Grizzlies at 20%, Mavs and Hawks 14%, and the Magic at 9%. I think that gets underway next hour. We'll keep you posted on all that. But up next, it's time for Jason. It's 4:30, bro.
I'm ready.
In the news. Hey, I have two airline stories to kick off the news for you.
I'm guessing they're not positive. They never are.
Okay. Well, they may have solved the mystery of the Malaysian Air Flight.
I saw this.
370.
But no one ever comes out with a breaking news. Is airline does great, everyone happy? It doesn't happen.
Here's Mike.
Prime time with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, still to come, we're going to hear about Lucas Glover's wife. Who is Lucas Glover? He is a professional golfer.
And who's his wife? She's insane.
Yeah, he won the U.S. Open in, I want to say, 2009. And then he has an affair with a Nike rep.
Mm. Well, he hasn't done that to me.
And his wife then divorces him. He goes to rehab, depression, everything. Well, now he's back and he's married and pretty good golfer. And she is certifiable.
Is this the same wife or is this a different wife?
No, it's a different wife.
Okay.
Yeah, new wife.
Because I was that I wasn't certain on, but this wife.
No, the other wife left him.
Yeah, this one should probably do some leaving as well, or maybe he should do the leaving.
So that'll be later. We have the Hot 5 at 5 in 25 minutes. A lot going on today. The NBA draft lottery is tonight. We've got more on the Warriors and the Rockets. But right now it is, what time is it? 4:35?
There you go.
It's May 15th, 2018. Time for the news. Bang. I'm your noted newsman. Two bits of airline news to kick off this segment. The first of which is they are claiming, experts.
Yeah.
Are claiming that they have finally solved the mystery of the doomed Malaysian Airlines flight that we can't find?
Yeah, this was a number of years ago, and it disappeared somewhere off the coast of Australia in the Indian Ocean.
Yeah, so I think that this idea that they've solved it is a little, it's headline grabbing, but it's not true. I think what they're basically just saying is, look, we're done spending the money.
There's no other options.
Yeah, we've laid out everything. No. Here is the prevailing theory.
And the prevailing theory is, and it's the one that's been there all along, so I don't know why this is necessarily breaking news, but the prevailing theory is that it was pilot suicide.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So they say that to go through it, there were 239 people on that flight, Malaysian Airlines flight 370, and they're saying that they were all unconscious and incapacitated because the pilot deliberately depressurized the plane, the cabin, and so that those people had no way of knowing that they were on what ended up being like an hours-long meandering path to their death.
And whether he let the plane run out of fuel and crashed, or whether he took it in to the ocean, but this was pilot suicide and murder.
So there are a lot of unanswered questions about that.
And by the way, they haven't found the plane and probably never will.
They said they're never going to find that plane. They
said it is in one of the most remote parts of the ocean.
On two occasions, whoever was in control of the plane and was probably the only one awake tipped the aircraft to the left. Now, the experts have a theory that the pilot was taking a final look at his hometown by doing that. Now, remember, think about it. Their theory is everybody has passed out.
Yeah. And he's the only one.
He's the only one awake, and he is going to take the plane down. So he dips the plane to the left, which they know, because that was his hometown. That's where he grew up. And he was taking one final gander at,
I guess wherever.
Wherever.
I mean, wherever he's from. I didn't see the hometown, but have you seen the search grid for where this potentially could be? Where they last saw the airplane versus, when they believe the plane went down or how much fuel it had left. The search area for this is, it's astronomical. I mean, there's no possible way.
There's a reason why they haven't found it.
And they never will.
So they say that this was a guy on 60 Minutes, one of the key experts, said that the captain dipped his wing to see Penang, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. That's his hometown. If you look very carefully, you can see it's actually a turn to the left and then start a long turn to the right. And then he does another left turn. So I spent a long time thinking about what this could be. What technical reason is there for this? And after 2 months, 3 months thinking about this, I finally got the answer. Someone was looking out the window. It might be a long emotional goodbye or a short emotional goodbye to his hometown. So then it disappeared. Now, the other unanswered question is, and of course they know it crashed in the far southern Indian Ocean, like you said.
Yeah.
But they're also wondering why he kind of toggled back and forth between different
flight paths.
Yeah, like flight paths that were being monitored. And they say that he was a very experienced pilot. He had nearly 20,000 hours of flight experience, and he'd even built a flight simulator in his house. He knew exactly what to do. So one of the biggest questions surrounding the flight was, how could a modern aircraft tracked by radar and satellite simply disappear? Well, at one point, he flew near the border of Malaysia and Thailand, crisscrossing into the airspace of both. but neither country was likely to see the plane as a threat because it was on the edge of their airspace. So both of the controllers aren't bothered about a mysterious aircraft because, okay, it's gone. It's in their space now, not in our space anymore. Problem. I don't need to worry about it. So they said that he, this is the theory, that he calculated. He knew what he was doing, toggling back and forth, throwing them both off of the trail.
The only question I have about this as I was reading through it is what happened to the co-pilot?
I don't know.
Because obviously they, you know, I find it hard to believe that they all went along with it. So what did he do to incapacitate the other people in the cockpit?
Yeah, his co-pilot, it doesn't say. They don't have a theory on that.
No, and if you don't find the black box, we'll have no idea, you know, what happened. And, you know, they're saying that parts of that ocean that they're in, one, definition of a needle haystack, the search area is an entire continent worth of ocean. And they're saying that some of the, you know, the depths of that, you know, we can't even send anyone down to look at it. And the bottom of it is all silt and soot. So even if it hit and sunk, there's a good chance that it's covered by the bottom of the ocean at this point.
So here's the other airline story. Remember the story about the woman that unfortunately died after she got sucked out of the window?
Yeah, part of the Southwest flight, engine blew, cracked the window, and she got pulled out part of the way and died from, blunt force trauma.
That has happened again.
Whoa.
It happened again.
This I did not see.
What's Peebo laughing at this for?
For heaven's sakes, Peebo.
What a jerk.
A Sichuan Airlines pilot was pulled half out of his plane on Monday after the windshield on the Airbus A319 broke.
If you notice that there seems to be a lot of planes, like windows bursting lately.
Right. What's that all about?
I don't know, but I'm glad I sit in the aisle.
Wasn't there another Southwest plane that had a window burst?
Had a window break.
Really?
No one died. Recently, yeah, just like a couple, maybe a week or two after the one with the lady died.
How did that break?
That I didn't see, but apparently the window blew out, and luckily no one died. Everyone was strapped in, but I'm sitting on the aisle from now on.
So nobody died in this emergency. 119 passengers were on board the flight.
But did the pilot die?
No, he did not die. The captain told the Business News that the windshield made a loud noise when it shattered. When I looked over to my side, half of my co-pilot's body was hanging out the window. Fortunately, he was wearing a seatbelt. The incident happened at about 33,000 feet in the air, and the aircraft depressurized at a temperature of 40 degrees below zero.
Holy hell.
The situation was very critical.
You think?
So there's an injured flight attendant said the emergency happened while she was serving food that was thrown into the air. All people were shouting on board. It was chaos. We just tried our best to reassure the passengers and make everyone believe us that we could touch down safely.
There's nothing to see here, people. Go home. Everything is calm. And by the way, is there anything scarier on earth than being halfway sucked out of an airplane?
Oh, my God.
At 700 miles an hour and 30,000 feet?
It's unbelievable. So I guess he was, you know, I guess, well, what they said about the woman on the Southwest flight was that the trauma, because they were also that high up.
Yeah.
The trauma of just the air and the wind to her head.
Yeah, and just getting whipped around.
Was enough to kill her.
Yeah.
That was not the case with this guy. Apparently, he made it out fine. He was, he had his seatbelt on, so.
I'm doing better. I'm all right. Just a flesh wound.
They say he's in normal condition and he's resting, and he just has a few scratches on his skin.
Well, can we maybe start taking a closer look at the windshields on these airplanes?
Yeah, they did compare. Is it the same window manufacturer as on the Southwest flight? And the answer to that is no.
Oh.
Two different window manufacturers.
Yeah, you wonder if maybe there's, you know, something going on with the people that are installing these.
Yeah, lawsuit.
Yeah.
All right, we move on. I gotta pull up my sheet here. Hold on. Takes a second.
Well, I think we have to break.
Yeah, no, I know.
Pay no attention to a stalling for time.
I have to tease something, though. I always have to tease.
It's all about the tease.
It's all about the tease.
Rob just gives him the tip.
I'm a tease.
It's what he does.
The
tip of the story.
We have a homeless killer whale problem.
Oh.
Here
we
in
do.
Oregon. Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Isn't the ocean their home?
No. Not always.
Whoa.
Well, I think it
Mind
should.
Blow.
Not always.
I think it should be. I think that one's on us.
Interesting. We'll get to that next. 444 on the fan.
Prime. Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
NBA draft lottery coming up. We will find out where the Blazers won't pick in the lottery. But right now we're in the news.
We were talking hot airplane news here, and I looked up the search area for the Malaysian flight, and there are some experts that are saying that some debris, a little piece washed up in Africa, so they think maybe based on the currents, there's some areas that it's more likely in than other. But the search area that it could be in is roughly the size of Australia.
What?
And Australia is about three-fourths the size of the United States. So if you want to think about how big you're searching for in parts of the ocean that are a mile plus deep, that's essentially what you're talking about at this point. And there's no more beaking. You're basically just flying over three-fourths of the United States hoping that you encounter something that's a mile or 2 miles deep in the water.
You know what you're doing? You're combing the desert. Like Spaceballs.
We ain't found it.
Yeah, so how long do you... Here's a question. How long do you look?
Well, I guess for the most part, they're not looking. I mean, the government...
No, I know, but how long do you look? Like, how long is appropriate to look for that thing?
This crashed 4 years ago.
I've spent a lot of money on
Yes, they have. And from different agencies, different governments, the United States has loaned ships for it. At this point, you're not doing anyone good searching for it. You're just wasting time and resources. And I know it sucks for those families. They'll never get those bodies back, and you'll never have a clear understanding of what exactly happened. But it's an impossible mission at this point. This is going to be one of those things that, like, 100 years from now, some rich dude's going to be out on a yacht or whatever, and he's going to stumble across something, or Paul Allen or James Cameron will be down there with a submarine, and they'll find this thing. But they have no idea. Remember the plane that went down in the French Alps? We knew where that went down, and it went down into the mountains, and it still took us like 2 years to find it.
It's true. Maybe Paul Allen is the right guy for this job. He finds everything else.
Get a sub and just kind of start cruising the floor.
That guy has found some old warships.
Yeah. But think about just the sheer size of that.
Didn't he find the Indianapolis? That was the one where the sharks ate all the bros?
Yeah.
Remember that?
But
he found that.
Imagine me saying, okay, from Chicago to the West Coast, somewhere in that area, top to bottom, be anywhere. And by the way, it could be 2 miles deep. Why don't you go looking for that? It's an exercise in futility.
Yeah. He did find the USS Indianapolis. Commissioned in 1932, active through World War II. It was torpedoed by the Japanese.
And that's the famous one where Quint from Jaws is telling the story about how they went in and then the sharks picked them off over the course of the next handful of days.
Didn't they make another movie about that, too, that was pretty popular, where they're all just hanging out in the water? And
I don't know.
They're saying, man, you just never knew. It was like you just try to survive. And
yep. And they would huddle together at night, and then they'd wake up in the morning, and there'd just be a couple of them that were gone. Oceanic white tips, though, not great whites.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Said that's were the ones that were coming and grabbing the dudes in the night.
Yeah, but a lot of guys survived. Like 300 or so of those bros survived out there.
Yeah, but it was just made famous by the Jaws speech. It's a great speech.
You know, Paul Allen, he does a lot of cool stuff.
Well, when you've got like $17 billion, what else are you going to do? You do cool stuff.
Well, you can do anything.
Exactly. Just if you were not checked by money, I bet you'd be doing cooler things than you're doing right now.
But I don't think I would be doing as cool things as Paul Allen.
No.
Like, I really like what he does with his money.
Yeah.
I mean, his businesses have not been good. But he does cool ass, man.
Well, James Cameron does this sort of stuff, too. Like explorers.
I know.
Like finding things.
I want to be like that.
Elon Musk.
Okay, well, we'll have to get to the homeless killer whale story tomorrow.
Who knew that the homeless problem was that bad here in the Northwest that now it's, killer whales?
But I do have a quick Bigfoot sighting.
Homeless Bigfoot?
Always love these.
Or gay Bigfoot. Or is it gay homeless Bigfoot?
You could make the case that this could be gay Bigfoot.
Interesting. It's the only Bigfoot, quite frankly, that I'm interested in at this point.
This is in New Jersey, and way out in the woods in the New Jersey Pine Barrens.
Mm-hmm. This is where the Jersey Devil
hangs
out?
That's where the Jersey Devil is, yep.
Yeah.
Dave and his wife who didn't want to share her name, spotted something they could not explain. The woman claims she saw Bigfoot. And here's what she said. Whatever this was, it had literally leapt across the entire road. It was about 6 feet tall.
That's not
impressive.
That's not necessarily Bigfoot.
Like a light-colored hair, kind of like a deer. But I'm like, it certainly wasn't a deer because it had its legs splayed and it almost looked like a ballerina leaping across the road.
Could it have just been like really a six-foot woodsman, like running around?
Well, I mean, if you're looking for gay Bigfoot.
Yeah. I mean, what if you saw me just running around the woods in the middle of the night like a shadowy figure?
I think you're missing it. If you're looking for gay Bigfoot.
The ballerina.
Yes.
Light on his feet. Nimble.
A little tippy-toey.
Nimble. Doing twirls and spins and whatnot.
She says it was off-road. Near Browns Mills. She says she saw the man beast in the rear view mirror. She's always been a skeptic, but no more.
The man beast. Wasn't Rob Lowe setting out with his boys to find Bigfoot? If Rob Lowe can't do it, what the hell chance do the rest of us have? Maybe it was a chupacabra.
Fox 29's Hank Flynn, who gets to the bottom of these stories.
Damn right Hank does.
He asked her, do you consider this credible?
Good question. To asking the person to claim to have seen gay Bigfoot.
Well, no, Hank asked the New Jersey representative for the National Bigfoot Field Research Organization what he thought.
Yeah.
Because he's legit.
Clearly.
Eric is his name.
And what was his response?
He says, I do, for a couple of reasons. Not only is it uncommon for somebody to report seeing it in their rearview mirror, as she did, but also because they weren't out there looking for Bigfoot. They were just out enjoying a nice day out in the woods with the dog, four-wheeling out in the woods, and then this happened. Which, that makes no sense.
Yeah, what did happen other than you see something kind of running through some scraggly woods? Like a bear.
How about that? Ballerina Bigfoot.
Yeah. Well, and someone says, you know, quite frankly, this is maybe the first reported sighting of a moderate foot.
Of moderate foot?
6 foot. I'm 6'3", 6'4". That's not.
Well, maybe he's 6 feet, but he has gigantic feet.
We're both bigger than that. Mike's hairy right now. What if Mike got all high on Ambien
and was
naked running through the woods? Maybe you'd think Mike was medium foot.
I'd probably have fallen asleep before I started running.
You ever taken Ambien and then stayed up? You get trippy on that stuff.
I have not.
Yeah, what if...
You should.
Mike's point is, what if Bigfoot is called Bigfoot only because it has big feet?
But
nothing else is big.
But the rest of it is...
small means.
Yeah, it's not just called big.
Yeah, it's big feet.
That is true.
Uh-huh.
But every other story I've seen about Bigfoot, he's like 9 feet tall.
Well, those people are looking
for
Bigfoot.
Idiots. Yeah, like maybe this is it. This is it. This is the first legit one.
This is medium foot.
He's actually only 6 feet and he dances like a ballerina.
There's some crazy stories from those Pine Barrens, man. You never know.
And that's what's happened is we're all looking up and we need to be looking straight ahead and maybe then we'd see more of a...
Never happens in the rearview mirror. That's what makes it legit.
I can't believe it.
Whatever. All right,
everything you see in the rearview mirror is exactly what was behind you.
That's in the news for May 15th. Coming up next, we have the Hot 5 at 5. Can you believe that?
I can.
We're already at the Hot 5 at 5.
Hopefully with more Bigfoot news.
We have a new NFL owner, Eli Manning, and his memorabilia fraud lawsuit. Robinson Cano, that's the big news of the day.
Yeah, it is.
Wait till you hear what happened with him. That's all next on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.